are listening to Night Talk, giving you depth and texture to the conversations that matter. Bertha Charuma on SAFM.
So, you know, South Africa's political parties recently released their election manifestos in stadiums filled with supporters. But the big idea behind this, that parties should simply communicate public policy proposal at launches with minimal rational and meaningful public engagement, is such a huge problem. It is so problematic. Parties should have platforms beyond rallies to communicate with the public on how they arrived at the solutions their manifestos propose. And helping us unpack this particular subject matter, I've got Patrick Kulati. He's the Chief Executive of Good Governance Africa's Southern African Region Office. Good evening and welcome to the show.
And to you and your listeners as well, it's such an honor to join you this evening.
I think it is a very, very pivotal moment or pivotal time to talk about some of these issues. We get promised a lot of things and delivery just is a different story altogether. So let's just go through some of the issues, you know, where we get policy proposals that get communicated to us through rallies. And at the end of the day, there's nothing meaningful that comes out of these engagements. Why do we believe this? Or why should, maybe I should ask you, why do you believe this approach is actually problematic?
Thank you again, Beth. And I'd like to just give this discussion a historical framing first in order to respond meaningfully to your question. You know, this month, on the 27th of April, we will be celebrating 30 years of democracy because we voted on this day 30 years ago in 1994, after years of the majority South Africans being denied their right to participate meaningfully in public affairs. So shortly thereafter the elections, a constitutional assembly was established which facilitated massive public participation process of South Africans of all hues in the development of the constitution. So that made South Africa a participatory and a representative democracy. Just in 1995, in January alone, already there were over 2 million public submissions. So we are coming from a point of view as a constitutional democracy that values public participation. So what then happens is that politicians use that inkling by South Africans to want to participate in the voting, to want to make a meaningful contribution in the affairs of the state. But they use that wrongly in the sense that they are not taking them seriously. They come in as and when they want the people's votes. That is what makes this whole thing problematic, because there is no meaningful public engagement. So this is a very important problem that we have in our country. We are now seeing a transition from voter agnosticism to voter apathy, where people are literally just walking away from voting, and that affects active participation in this democracy.
And when you look at the manifestos for all these parties, very, very similar indeed. I mean, for example, they talk about load shedding, they talk about economic growth, they talk about unemployment, crime, service delivery, corruption, which is a similar thing. And you argue that parties should provide more transparency about the background analysis, tools used, and projected costs for the proposed policies. How do you think this could be achieved effectively?
So let's look at it like this. So if all these problems, we all agree that they are problems, what the voters want to know is how uniquely each of the political parties that are vying for the votes of the electorate, how are they going to deal with those problems? Not necessarily hearing one party criticizing another or all of those kinds of things. People want to know, and they deserve to be informed, how are we going to deal with this? So what has been happening in the rallies that have been held the atmosphere is so electric, it's so emotive, such that there is no real interrogation of what is being said. Everything that is being said is not always linked to reality. For example, if you say load shedding is a problem in the country, and then your solution is to say deal with it from a skills base, for example, by bringing in engineers to deal with that, that tells us that you assume that the problem with Eskom and energy security in the country is because of lack of skills. Is that so? Is that the solution that you're providing? What processes have you gone through to be able to come to that particular solution? So as the public, as the voters, we deserve to know what is your thinking about this particular public policy issue that is affecting our daily lives, not what is happening in the rallies where people are, if there's music, there's everything, all those things are fine, but what in the final analysis, what is the substance of the solution, and how are they going to, those solutions, are they going to work for the public? Another important thing here is that when these things are being promised to people, there is a lot of overlooking of the complexities of public policy implementation. Also, the political maneuvering, the judicial processes, and the challenges of democracy when you want to implement something in a multi-party democracy, such that you create high expectations that you're not going to be able to deliver on in the time that you say you're going to do it. So that is why it's very, very important that politicians take us and take the electorate seriously to be able to temper our expectation by being realistic and telling us the truth as to what's going to be happening.
So do you believe that these politicians actually undermine the intellect of the person on the ground?
It seems so. A lot of the times, in our WhatsApp group one time, a friend posted a picture of a lady who attended two rallies of different parties wearing different T-shirts. You could see that that person has gone there maybe with friends, and so there's no engagement of that person on the actual substance of the matter. They get given T-shirts, they get given some maybe transport and things like that. When they get to the field or the stadium, there's music, then the leader speaks, and after that, everybody disperses. So where do politicians really, I'm now talking about not necessarily their members only, I'm talking about people beyond their membership base, the electorate that they want votes from. When do they really meaningfully engage with them on these policy issues? I think there's another issue here, which I think is important to highlight, that South Africa is very young when it comes to democracy. So there is a responsibility on the part of the political leaders to deepen and strengthen democracy by imparting or by empowering people with information to make decisions that may not necessarily benefit them as political parties. So what we see now, we're seeing a transactional political game where we come to you only when we want your votes. And that undermines the democracy that needs to be entrenched during and in between elections.
You also, talking about advocating, for a more mature democracy, which also comes in. I think you've answered the part of the question when I asked about the intellect of just the general person. So how can political parties better engage with the public beyond rallies to achieve this?
All right. I just want to go back to something that we started talking about earlier on. I just want to make an example, because tomorrow, the e-tolls in Gauteng are being discontinued, are being scrapped.
Yes.
Now, how that policy, I'm just making that as an example, around how that policy came into being is that when the government realized that a public policy problem of building and maintaining roads needed funding, so they decided to come up with a solution of charging the users for the use of the roads. And so they introduced a very short period of time for people to participate. And even at that time, when you read the record, there were very, very few people that participated in those processes. But the policy was forced and implemented. Huge investments were made. And these gantries were built all over Southern. Today, that whole project has come to a standstill. The people simply refused to pay, and it collapsed. And now they're sitting with a huge bill. And tomorrow, that whole thing is going to be scrapped. So the point I'm trying to make is that the implications are far beyond just the participation of people. They speak to how the resources get wasted in the process and how the funds that could be used, even if people were being consulted, were brought on board. Not because, you see, the reason why we're talking about this in relation to parties that are vying for elections, it is because it is likely that some of their members are going to be in parliament, and they need to understand that the constitution guarantees that people need to participate in issues that affect their well-being.
It was a very expensive process, because
we
are stuck with gantries. They now need to rethink how we're going to utilize those gantries, because taking them down is another expense, and it's the expense where they go to the coffers, where a basic South African citizen has to dig deep from their tax to pay for such an expensive process.
So yes. Now, coming, it could have been easily avoided. Yes.
Totally. Now, coming back to the question that I had asked before, you gave an example. How then can political parties better engage the public beyond rallies to achieve what they want to achieve?
In this day and age, there are many platforms, social media platforms, Zoom and all of that. I've seen that where with, for example, Action SA, when they were engaging with the public and their public policy and their policies, where they organized the hybrid models where some people were in the venue, some people were coming in. I think we need more of those kinds of things so that we can get value out of the people into the policies that political parties arrive at. Because sometimes political organizations are echo chambers. Everybody basically says what they think the members want to hear. But once you bring in the oxygen of views from other people outside of your political ideology, maybe your policy proposal could be even better. This is the value of public participation. I also think that it must be made to be meaningful, not to be a tick box exercise where people are just bust in and brought in, given a couple of meals, and then they're bust off again, and the court at the party carries on as they had originally planned. So what we need is a sense that politicians understand that they are serving the public. They are not serving, especially when they get into power or into the state or the institutions of government or the state, like the parliament and so on. They are no longer serving the interests of their members. They now serve all of us. That means, therefore, that they need to take people seriously and their views seriously.
The opinion piece discusses the importance of policy framing in helping voters understand proposed solutions. How can political parties improve their policy framing to better connect with the voters?
Well, in the piece, I refer to a person that I respect so much in public policy. His name is Dennis Group. He talks about four ducks that must be in the row. Firstly, there must be a clearly identifiable problem. Because, for example, you can say the problem is crime. But how do you define that problem? What is it about it being crime? So you need to look at it from various ways, define the problem very, very well. Then you must have a story, an understandable story about why is it a problem. For example, in the example I gave about Eskom, why is it that in this day and age we're having load shedding? And by the way, I think the word load shedding is a policy solution on behalf of Eskom to manage demand. So basically, why is it that we're having load shedding? Is it because of corruption? Is it because of lack of maintenance? Is it because of skills? So all of those matters must be put to the table so that we can then say, if we're going to come up with a skills-based, for example, solution, we are sure that it is not leaving out other forms. For example, if there's a problem of corruption and yet you are bringing in engineers after engineers, then and then that problem of corruption is conducted by the top leaders of political parties, then you are wasting your time. So what I'm trying to say is that that's an important piece to find out why is it this a problem, that there needs to be a convincing data and evidence to back that up. Then there might be a right policy solution. All of those things need to be put in place by, especially by those who are vying for power. They need to think in those terms even before they come in, because when they are now inside government, we don't want people to be still thinking about how to implement what they have promised, because that's going to take more years to do that.
And if our listeners would like to engage, if you would like to engage, you are welcome.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm very much here. Can you hear me? Patrick?
Hi, Betha.
Yes, I can hear you. Okay, we've just had a little bit of a challenge there with the line. But in the meantime, our lines are opened. You can send us your voice notes right here on SAFM, and you can send them to 0614104107. What's your take on this conversation? And most probably, let's look at solutions. How can we try and give advice to these parties that when you promise us a lot of deliveries in your manifestos, how would we want, as citizens, how would we want to police or to find out how far you've gone in delivering these policies? Talking is another thing. Action is another thing. And being responsible for what you have actually promised is a totally different thing altogether. It'll be interesting to hear your views, your opinions, and if you have any suggestions, I'd really be interested to know. That's send us your voice notes on 0614104107, or you can give us a call at 086-000-2032. And I'm talking to Patrick Kulati, the Chief Executive of Good Governance Africa's Southern African Regional Office. Patrick, welcome back.
Thank you. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened.
I suppose it's technology. Maybe a bit of load shedding happened in between. Who knows? But we're back. We're back on air.
Thank you. Good to be back.
You also mentioned challenges in implementing policies within the complexity of a democratic state. What specific challenges do you think parties need to address in this regard?
Okay. Sometimes people do not appreciate the time it takes to develop and implement policy within government. I'll make an example within the article itself about the National Health Insurance Bill. According to Innovative Medicine South Africa, this idea of this health thing came, it was introduced in the health plan of the ANC in 1994. Now, it is only this year that the president is ready to sign it into law. And even then, there's a lot of litigation against it. So when politicians communicate that we're going to do A, B, C, D, sometimes they forget that there are differences of political priorities. There are multi-parties that may oppose what you're talking about. Sometimes there are even internal party political squabbles that fights that are happening within the same party that might cause a lot of delays in how you want to implement what you said. For example, another example, you look at the United States of America. President Biden, when he was campaigning for votes, he promised to deliver student loan relief debt relief. When he started, I think it was 2020. We're now a few months before the elections, and it is only 2 days ago when I read that he has outlined how he's going to do that. And even that plan would still maybe need to go to Congress. So sometimes, because democracy requires that government needs to go to Parliament, to different committees, and sometimes it needs to facilitate public participation, those things take long. And it is those delays and those challenges that come with being a democracy that you need to educate the people about, so that you can temper with an unrealistic expectation of your electorate after they have voted you in.
And you also highlight in the essay that there's need for parties to identify, prioritize problems while designing the right solutions. How can parties then effectively navigate this process?
Okay, so for example, we've said at the beginning that clearly there is an alignment across most political parties about the nature of the problems that we're having in South Africa. So one of the best ways to do this is to simplify the plan of action that you are going to do. And I keep making this example to people that I talk to. I once visited Kigali, and a friend of mine said, let's drive into his hometown, maybe 80 kilometers or 100 kilometers away from Kigali City. And we went into this town, and he said, let's go to the municipal building here to see. It was a weekend. So we saw, when we went there, we saw outside from that municipality, like a yard, there is a clear plan of that municipality that says how many, for example, kilograms of seeds are going to be distributed to how many women, how many kilometers of roads are going to be tarred here, how many hectares of land are going to be plowed and given over, how many houses are going to be built. All of those things are put there in simple terms in the local languages, in a way that you can track by quarter, and the municipality put. So what we need are simple plans like that that can be easily traceable. But what you see, especially in things like the IDPs, huge documents that no one ever understands. So this is where the problem happens in our country. We have huge, voluminous documents that are not helping us. But we need to simplify and say, if the problem is crime, yes, this is what's going to be done. If the problem is load shedding, this is what's going to be done by when. For me, if we were to get to that point and stop all these kinds of policies that we keep writing and writing without implementing, that would help give confidence to the people that this government or whoever is in power is really, really serious and about taking their matters.
Right. You discussed the concept of problem structuring as a way to develop effective policy solutions. Can you explain how this process works and how it can be applied in the political context? And I also really like the way you broke down how you make sure you are able to articulate whatever it is that you say you're going to deliver. Keep it simple, keep it straightforward, and keep checking. And also the community can keep check, especially if it is publicized. It's in a public space and people are able to say, have you built 10 houses? They go back and, you know, you have some comparison or somewhere where you verify what was promised. Yeah.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm advocating, that we remove all of these long and, I mean, if you look at some of the manifestos, there's books and books. And how are we ever going to be able to track that as the public? But now you were asking about the issue of problem structuring. It's basically a fancy way to define really a process of testing different representation of a problem situation. So in other words, when you're looking at a problem, there's a definition for a public policy problem. When you're looking at the public policy problem, then it could be, for example, accidents on the roads that take place or crime that happens. When you analyze it, you realize that this crime takes place, let's say, on Fridays and Saturdays and Sunday, and then picks up. So you can work out that, oh, some of the driving forces behind this, it may be when it's weekend, people drink alcohol or this and that. So you design your intervention according to the analysis that you would have done, so that you don't just look at the fact that there are people that have been stabbed. In other words, you're going to build more hospitals for them. But you say, how do we deal with the core source of this problem, which is that over weekends, people drive under alcohol. So This is a way of structuring a problem so that you can see its various manifestations down through its problem tree, so that you don't address one part of the problem without thinking about the implication of those solutions to the other. That's like this thing we're talking about. We were talking about the poultry. They were addressing the issue of funding, but they caused a serious social problem in society. In a country with an economy that was going down, unemployment that was going up. And so you introduce this charge system that without any consultation. So it was a combination of problems. So problem structuring helps you to avoid all of those kinds of problems.
Given the upcoming elections, do you think there is still time for parties to improve their communication and engagement with the public, or is it too late for meaningful change?
Unfortunately, it's too late, but the agenda for democratization continues. South Africa is very young, is a very young democracy. Sometimes we forget that. I was in Ethiopia and in Nigeria and Ghana over the last 2 weeks. In Ghana, they got independence in 1957 when Kwame Nkrumah stood up and declared their independence. They are still facing problems today of corruption and other things. In Nigeria, they were free in 1960 or 61. So the point I'm trying to make here is that, the process of democratization and good governance is an agenda that has no end. So although we have these elections that punctuate our journey forward, we need to strengthen and deepen democracy by adopting good governance principles, which are about accountability, transparency, participation, so that people can feel part of this evolving democracy. Because according to the barometer, Africa barometer, there's a sense that in Africa, and indeed in South Africa, people are even falling back on democracy, saying they are prepared to be even ruled by a dictator simply because democracy is not delivering for them. So we have to stop that, so that by making sure that people feel part, not just by participating, but also through development, getting jobs, and doing all things that can empower people to feel like they own this democratic project.
And lastly, I mean, we have to wrap it up quite quick. What do you believe are the key steps parties should take to ensure a more informed and engaged electorate? And how can citizens hold parties accountable for their policy proposals?
I think they need to use the available means, engagement, social media, engagement with people, tell them exactly what they're planning to do by when, and make sure that when people participate and say their views, they take them seriously. They need to simplify their messaging. They need to be clear and not have a long list of priorities, which you can never understand now because everything is priority. So I think what is important is for political parties to really, really, really take people seriously now. And after this election, the job starts for them to really start engaging through their party machinery and organizational machineries so that they don't wait for the next elections to come up.
Patrick Kulati, Chief Executive of Good Governance Africa Southern African Regional Office, chatting to us this evening. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. And let's hope that people that are running their political parties or that are running to be in parliament and be governors can hear this, to say when you do your manifestos, actually just keep it simple, basic, straight to the point. Coming up next, freedom fighter Chris Honey was shot dead in the driveway of his house. And most of us do remember. And if you were not born then, well, this is a platform where you get to learn a little bit of history. We'll be chatting to our guest, 31st annual commemoration of Chris Honey's death, remembering South African struggle hero. We'll be chatting to Dr. Gregory Houston, former chief research specialist in the developmental, capable and Ethical State Research Division of Human Science Research Council, when we get back.